Good morning.
Good morning.
I think it's awesome that we have an Eno stepping forward for the first time today. It's the embodiment of the beginner's mind, which we all are beginners. And how do we work with our beginner's mind when we're, some of us maybe control freaks? I don't mean to expose myself right off the bat. Or perfectionists. I don't know if that's an issue with any of you. Maybe I'm talking to self-realized beings. So I just want to acknowledge your courage and encourage you as you encourage us to step forward into don't know. I want to begin by offering homage. Homage to the Buddhas, the matriarchs, patriarchs, and ancestors. Homage to the Dakota relatives. Homage to our teachers. Homage to our family and our friends and our relatives. Today I'd like to have a conversation with you about this koan. Are we monastics? Are we lay? What are we? And I'm finding out that this question is very old. It's not unique to us. It's been asked before. Many of you know that I was blessed, and I use the word blessed. If that is a turnoff for any of you, let me know. It was a very auspicious offering to me. And it was an offering that was made from the generosity of you, the community, the Sangha in which I practice. I received many gifts. And it's somewhat overwhelming for me to receive the love and generosity from each of you and from people who are not here who supported me. Why is that hard? Because I have a story. I have a story of doing it on my own. And that story continues to unravel. And Tassajara, in my interconnectedness with all of you, all beings, the ancestors, which I'll talk about briefly, really penetrated my heart in a very deep way. And the result of that penetration is healing. And I have even a greater desire to share what I learned as a result of your generosity and love, and more importantly, to embody that teaching. So I invite you to hold me accountable to my vow, to the vow, the Bodhisattva vow, to free all beings, including myself. So Tassajara, I went there seeking wisdom. Oh, Buddha. Seeking wisdom and wanting to study. So already I have ideas about how the experience is going to be. And that's the teaching, is to really observe our stories and be generous with ourselves and compassionate. Because if we can do it with ourselves, we can do it with all beings. And part of what I'm experiencing right now, I want to be honest, is I'm still making a transition back here. I kind of feel like an astronaut who's been in space exploring and investigating the space of the mind and re-entering Earth. And how is that expressed? How is that embodied? Beyond words. So I'm not sure with this talk, it might be discombobulated, and I just want to say that's part of my transition and expression of what's going on with me. So what is this practice? Whether it's defined as monastic, like at Tassajara, where there's a schedule. And quite honestly, Zazen is not a major part. It's an important part, but it's not the part of monastic life. Actually, what I found was work practice was the work practice and serving was the most informative in investigating this mind in relation to working, in relation to with people who were from all over this planet, in relation to my ideas of Zen, of my ideas of being a Zen priest. And as I said, my idea of why I was going there. So one of the things that I learn continuously is that whatever my ideas are, they'll be blown apart and something else will arise. And quite possibly, for me, the universe may have more wisdom as far as what is needed to develop my character and my understanding of Zen in order to benefit all beings than this small mind does. Like, whoa, that's humbling. And that's a skill. And that expression cannot be faked. One of the teachings, and some of these teachings I did talk about at Sesshin. So those of you that were in Sesshin, it may be a repeat, and I apologize. And I think it's important. One of the initial teachings that Reb brought forward, I just want to say, for those of you that don't know and for those of you that do know, I think it's important for us to realize that this Dharma Center is connected to San Francisco Zen Center and Tassajara Zen Monastery. How is that so? We're in Minnesota. They're in California. Sosan is our guiding teacher. They have several guiding teachers. How is that so? How is that so is Suzuki Roshi, a Japanese Zen master, came to California in 1959. And one of the thoughts was that he would develop and transmit the Zen teaching. So that's 1959, he came to San Francisco. Shortly after, Katagiri Roshi came, who is our ancestor, whether we wear a okesa, a rakasu, or we wear it, him in our hearts. He is our ancestor. Came to California and worked with Suzuki Roshi. They were two cosmic rock stars on this planet. They revolutionized and radicalized Zen in a way that the Western mind could access. That is phenomenal. No small matter. They worked with San Francisco Zen Center. At that time, it was Japanese mainly. And then slowly, the Western people, practitioners, started to come. And pretty soon, people were practicing Zazen in San Francisco Zen Center. Suzuki Roshi had a dream of a place where people who were serious in the sense of had the capacity both within their hearts, because it's not for everybody. I mean, it's not a criticism. It's not for everybody. And had the spiritual and physical capacity to just focus on Zen. He saw this land, Tassajara. Tassajara is it's a vortex. It's an energy vortex on this planet. It used to, many, many years ago, it used to be a place where indigenous people had ceremonies and festivals. Nobody lived there. But the energy is still there. You can feel it. So Suzuki Roshi and his students along with Katagiri Roshi, developed Tassajara. Katagiri Roshi was the third abbot of San Francisco Zen Center. He is our ancestor. He was part of Suzuki Roshi and he together, bringing Zen. I say that because I had no real understanding of that until I went to Tassajara. I would say in my mind's eye, yeah, Katagiri Roshi's cool. He did a lot for us. That's great. But it didn't really have the depth. It didn't have the depth that it has now. And it was important to me. It was important to me that when I was at Tassajara, that we said his name. We said Katagiri Roshi. Reb said Katagiri Roshi. We said his name. It's very important to recognize our ancestors. Recognize the shoulders and who we stand on. And I'm sorry about the energy. I know I'm a little intense. It's a continual teaching. I'll pull back. But I just want to say that was a very, very important teaching when I was at Tassajara Zen Center. So Reb talked about stillness, silence. He talked about stillness in four stages. First, to remember stillness. Second, to receive stillness. Third, to practice stillness. Fourth, to transmit. It was very beautiful because at that time when he was giving us the teaching, we were at the end of Tongariro. Tongariro is a very intense period of sitting for 5 days. So when he brought that teaching forward, we could receive it with ease, greater ease. What is this stillness? Oh, yeah. It was like when I was at the street retreat in San Francisco and we were sitting in the park and all of a sudden I felt something on my knee. I opened my eye. It was a bird. I felt another something on my other knee. Opened my eye. Another bird. Stillness is like that. It's in the midst of activity, there's this space of calm. And if I don't go grabbing it, it just kind of opens up. And in that calm, in that stillness, in that silence, all beings are free from attachment, from clinging. Anything is possible in that space. So how do we do this? How do we do this in our daily lives, the stillness? How do we remember? I think for me, that's the importance of Zazen. And Zazen, Dogen talks about Zazen in the Fukaza Zengi, the universal recommended instruction for Zazen. He also speaks of it in Zazen Shin, the acupuncture needlelessness of Zazen. And I feel that it's possibly something to aspire to as Westerners, because how do we, with our bodies, we sit on chairs, we sit in couches, we slump, we work with computers. So to sit in full lotus or half lotus, for some of us, it's not possible. Suzuki Roshi talks about in Beginner's Mind, Zen Mind, that really what you need is a straight spine. So what does that mean, having a straight spine? It means finding the spine that is connected to your pelvis. So there's beautiful sit bones, and then at the base of the base of the spine is that beautiful coccyx, and it forms a triangle in which the spine can just hang. And then from there, moving your awareness up, there's a natural tendency for the spine to ascend and the head to gently rest on top of the spine. And then the breath. The breath has some ease. You can, so as the mind is quieting and the body is quieting, you can actually sense your breath in your body. And initially bringing the focus of the mind to the breath, this can create some discomfort because the mind looking at the breath, it's like a laser. And it's a training. We're not used to observing our breath moving in and out of our body. So as we begin to experience the mind and the body settling, there's a sense of balance that comes in. It's natural. Because naturally, our being, we're free. We are free from attachments. We're free from aversion. We're free from ill will. This natural calm creates the opportunity for compassion to arise. Compassion for ourselves and feeling that freedom. And the natural tendency when we feel free and when we feel good, usually we want to share that. And if we don't, that's an opportunity too. What's going on with me that I don't want to share this good feeling? Why am I tight with it? What's the stinginess? What's going on here? And investigating that with compassion. Suzuki Roshi further states, the most important point is to own your own physical body. If you slump, you lose yourself. Your mind will wander somewhere else and you will not be in your body. I think that's really important, is to create an awareness when we're sitting. What is our sitting? What is our sensibility around our sitting? Am I slumping? Where is my mind? And bringing that back and enlivening the body. The only way, maybe you know something different. The only way to change or pivot is to be present. If I'm not present, I can't help myself and I can't help all beings because I'm not there. So constantly growing that awareness. Katagiri Roshi, and this ability to be present, that is the Dharma gate to silence and no silence. If we are to have any chance to experience silence, it'll be with presence. And if you know another way, let me know. I'm open. There's a beautiful book that's recently been written called The Light That Shines Through Infinity by Andrea Martin regarding Katagiri Roshi's teaching. When I got home from Tassajara, I devoured it. Katagiri Roshi talks about the deep practice and silence being available to anyone. He states, keep your mouth shut. Even if you stop talking and remain silent, this is not silence. This is silence conceptualized. Talking is still there because your silence is the other side of talking. So just because we're keeping our mouth shut and we're not talking doesn't mean we're not talking. This is like pretending to listen to a person talking while having a conversation in your own mind about what they're saying or what you want to say or what you're thinking about what they're saying. Katagiri Roshi says, in real silence there is communion. That is gold. That was my experience too. I found it especially accessible in nature. Looking, the night sky was beyond. Looking up at the night sky that is unencumbered by artificial light, the blackness has a texture one can experience. In this bright, starlit sky, the darkness has many levels beyond itself. The mind is naturally stilled in the magnificence of this vastness, in the bigness of what it sees, in the insignificance of itself in relation to it. This is the communion of silence in connection with the universe. Silence can only be in connection with all beings, with everything. Nothing is left out. The good, the bad, and the ugly, it's all there in the silence. This is the instruction of Dogen in Fuka Zazengi. Think of not thinking. Not thinking, what kind of thinking is that? Non-thinking. This is the essential art of Zazen. The Zazen I speak of is not meditation practice. It is simply the Dharma gate of joyful ease, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. That's awesome. And what does it mean? It is the pivot. It is the pivot between self and no self. This pivot is just not like a one-dimensional thing. This pivot is very dynamic. It's actually what I believe at this time, and it could change. That pivot is the culmination of the transformation practices of Zazen. What? Transformational practices? You've not said anything about that. What is that? When you sit in Zazen and watch your mind, and investigate and have the compassion that the attachment to whatever it is and the clinging to whatever it is creates suffering. And this suffering is not just your suffering. This is the suffering of all beings. That is the dawn of wisdom. And I am here sitting with all beings. I could not sit here if I was not supported by all beings. How does that work? Well, in the morning, I have to eat. The water that I drink is a source of medicine, of nourishing this body, especially if you're nervous and dehydrated. Creates electrolytes. And it quenches the thirst and brings down the heat, cools the mind. That's just this little sip of water. The food that's grown, whether you eat oatmeal or, I don't know, fruit, I hope you eat, that's grown by people, harvested. The sun helps, the rain helps, the seasons help, the soil, the insects, worms, fertilizer, shit. I mean, it's all beautiful. It's all there. And it all supports me having the capacity to sit. That blows my egocentric mind wide open. Because no longer, it's never been, it was a delusion. A delusion. I have to say that because sometimes it doesn't stick. So I need some Velcro. Delusion. I know it's crazy, isn't it? So, yeah, it's a delusion. It's a delusion to think I, you, we do anything in isolation. Even though we may feel isolated. One time, I might have said this story in Sesshin, so if I did, I'm sorry to repeat, but it's worth repeating. I was in the kitchen cutting, I don't know, could have been any of the 20,000 vegetables. No, it's an exaggeration. But I was cutting vegetables, and all of a sudden I just said, you know what, we would work in the kitchen. There were like 12 of us working in the kitchen. It was a whole crew. I said out loud, I said, you know, I feel really alone today. I can't believe how isolated I feel. It was real. My friend, my Dharma friend next to me says, GD, you're not alone. She said, I felt that way yesterday. And somebody said the exact same thing to me. You're not alone. You're connected. All of a sudden, I'm like, wow, I'm free. I'm free because somebody touched me with words and reminded me I'm not alone. That's what we do for each other. We remind each other when we're sad and feel isolated and depressed. We're not alone. You are not alone. We are together. We can do this together. So this transformational practice, oh man, the pivot is so important. You can only pivot if you have awareness. awareness that you're selfing. Awareness like, it's like this. It's no small secret that I find the kitchen challenging. And I was in the kitchen all the time. And I constantly had to pivot. Let go, let go, let go. And feel some joy. Feel some joy with the onions. Feel some joy with the people I was working with. That is the pivot. That's where it begins, is awareness in the mind of the condition of the mind. And pivoting that condition, what may be an unwholesome feeling, unwholesome thought, pivoting that into wholesomeness, into goodness. We have that capacity, and the practice supports us. Suzuki Roshi says, when you do something, you should burn yourself completely like a good bonfire, leaving no self. I'm like, wow! Imagine living like that. Fully, wholeheartedly burning yourself. And it's not like sacrificing. I'm not talking that. I'm talking about full presence. I mean, that's amazing. To feel your feelings, unwholesome feelings, and then pivot into wholesomeness. And then to share that with all beings fully. That is the embodiment of the Bodhisattva vow. I'm there. Katagiri Roshi says, to take care of your life is to burn the flame of your life force in everything you do. Katagiri Roshi is saying the same thing. Really, use your energy, burn your energy. What does that mean? Be present, fully present, heart, mind, body. I'm there. I'm there for myself. I'm there for you. We can do this. We'll be a bonfire. Imagine sitting in the flames of your life in an upright position continuously. No small matter. It takes training. And this, I was listening to this Tibetan nun who was recently here. There's a beautiful audio tape. She says, when you are fully present, naturally you will have a kind mind and a vast mental attitude. And altruism will arise. That's like, wow, a vast mental attitude, which means there's a continuum that we have of responding. We don't respond in our habituated ways. We respond on a continuum given the causes and conditions of what's arising. I'm wondering what time it is. 10:20. Okay. Because I want to leave some time for questions. All these teachers, Katagiri Roshi, Suzuki Roshi, they embodied the wholehearted practice of compassion and wisdom. And I feel we are really fortunate to be able to have their teachings and to look and investigate in relationship to our practice and our minds, how they embodied the teaching as a guidance. We drop body and mind, returning to silence again and again. So it's this self, no self, dropping off. And silence, once we tap into silence, doesn't mean that we're going to be there forever. It's a practice. It's a constant drop. It's a constant practice of letting go of self and opening up the heart. and responding from a heart base. I just really want to emphasize, just because you've tasted silence once, that's not it. It is it, and it's not it. The practice is continuous. In silence, I said this, we develop compassion and wisdom for ourselves, each other, and all beings. We develop spiritual stability in order to awaken in times of ease and joy, chaos and confusion, suffering and agony, holding both equally with compassion and wisdom. So this spiritual stability really is very important in providing an anchor. Because even we often focus on sometimes the bad, the suffering and the agony. Well, positive experiences can be very destabilizing as well. So the spiritual stability that we're growing supports our ability to be present with whatever is arising with equanimity. Teachers here have talked about the eight worldly winds, and that's actually in a sutta that I won't be able to read today, but the eight worldly winds are always there, and I'm trying, what are the eight worldly winds? Gain and fame. There you have it. Thank you very much. But yeah, it's these, whether it's good or bad, being tossed away is destabilizing. And cultivating spiritual stability really supports the stability to face whatever is arising within those causes and conditions. So I don't know right now. The question is, are we monastic or are we lay? Can I just finish up? I don't know. I would like to end with something Katagiri Roshi said. Whatever happens in your life, try to go beyond your pleasure or anger, like or dislike, and just be with the Dharma. Stand up in the depth of human existence and take a deep breath there. Then take best care of your everyday life. Act wholeheartedly, constantly trying to be with the stream of great energy. That is the Zen way. This is a wonderful practice for us. Thank you.